You're tuning in to the Raised by Rentals program. This podcast will contain strong language and spoilers for decades-old media properties. Join us.
Welcome, everybody. This is the podcast where we examine pop culture franchises of the VHS era and improv new stories, because making stuff up is free and money don't grow on trees, to imagine how we might improve our favorite movies, TV, and games. I'm Josh.
I'm Mike.
And we were raised by rentals. Mike, welcome to episode 69. That's right. It's the nice episode.
I didn't even realize we were on that episode. That's awesome.
We're about to get real naughty. Real freaky naughty.
Well, and, you know, I don't know if you are, but if you're down with OCP, you know, you need to say something.
Yeah, you know me. Well, I was going to say, we're about to get naughty. But by naughty, I mean bad. And by bad, I mean, you know, bad. Actually bad. Actually terrible. So for this special episode 69, we have decided to do something new, a new approach to the Raised by Rentals formula. I think over the past, like, 2 years, damn, it's been more than 2 years. The past 2 years we've been doing this, we have tried to keep things interesting, mix things up. Our standard format, obviously, is to improv some kind of a new story based on an existing pop culture franchise, right? We do horror movie versions of movies that aren't horror. We do, like, sequels to stuff that never got sequels. Or in some cases, we actually try to improve something by imagining what we might have done if we had the keys to the kingdom. To go back all the way to our first episode, that's what we talked about. What we initially started trying to do was, how do we, like, make things better? And we got more and more into the improv storytelling, to the point where we eventually started doing original storytelling. And then we started bringing on some of our friends to be, like, horror hosts. And we started with our own game, randomizing, like, story elements for ourselves to challenge us to see if we could come up with a story, which turned out to be this crazy story about Mousetrap, the board game.
Mousetrap, the board game, the movie, or the comic. I'm sorry, I forgot we did a comic.
Yes. And it had, like, McGruff the crime dog and Spuds McKenzie and Sylvester the cat. And it was, like, such wackiness. It was ridiculous. Yep. And, you know, we had Sam from the Western New York Horror Crew come on and help us with our Yule Parish Christmas special by acting as our Elvira / Joe Bob as our horror host to give us ideas on what we should do. And then, you know, Michael May came on, did the same thing, and gave us, I think, probably some pretty specific instructions on the story that, like, he wanted to see. But we've always had a good time, whether we were improving something or just coming up with something totally original. So in order to keep things interesting and not just keep repeating ourselves over and over again, we thought it would be fun, instead of improving something, let's improv ruin something instead.
But I think the trick is going to be, can we still make a fun story? I don't know that it'll be possible, but I think that's what I want to aim for, is, can we take this ridiculousness we're about to throw at this product and make something good? Like, can the stew still be tasty?
Yeah, I think so. I think if our track record is any indication, we could probably do something fun. But that doesn't stop me from sitting here sweating about it, wondering, like, what the hell we're going to do. So
we got some ridiculousness in store, so.
Absolutely. And when we were first, you know, shooting the shit on a text message, I had some crazy idea. I was probably drunk. I mean, I usually am, let's be honest. I had this crazy idea that we should take a movie that is awesome, that is, like, impeccable, that we can't find a way to improve. And at first in my head, I was like, how do we take something perfect and make it even better? But I was like, no, we can't do that. So then I texted you, like, oh my God, dude, we got to take something great and just fucking ruin it. Just make it terrible. You know, like, how do we take a great movie and just change all the great stuff about it, but then still tell a story at the end, so the story that still makes sense, that we might still want to see, but just make that whole core concept just a total mess, you know?
Absolutely.
The problem is that the more we talked about it, the more it ballooned out of control. It was, oh man, what if we did this? And what if we did this? And we started thinking about terrible tropes that we see in movies that either make a bad movie bad or make a movie that could have been good bad because somebody just fucks it up. And I think that we can all name some movies that probably could have been better than they are, but they are likely the victims of terrible Hollywood producer notes.
Yep.
Right? Where some ridiculous executive who isn't actually a movie maker, he's just the money man, he gets some wild hair about, oh, you know what the kids like these days? And then you got to put X into your movie. And, you know, the director and the writer who don't have as much, you know, sway, they don't have as much clout in the industry, they don't have the money, you know, to say no, they end up putting some dumb bullshit in the movie because, well, the money man, you know, said that's what he wants to see. So I guess we'll do that. And I was thinking, well, what? Yeah, let's do that. Like, that sounds fun.
But that, see, I think that that's a wonderful idea, because this is something you hear again and again and again throughout Hollywood, particularly in genre films, particularly like, you know, comic book movies, sci-fi movies, horror movies, fantasy movies, where the studio interference will always be, you know, yeah, but do we need that? Can't we do this instead? Like, one of my favorite examples is with Peter Jackson and the Lord of the Rings. When he first tried to get Lord of the Rings out there, the studios were hellbent on making it only two movies. They didn't want a movie for each of the books. They were like, no, make it two movies. And he was like, well, no, each movie should be one of the books. And they just did not want it. It wasn't until he got to New Line that they were like, fucking do it. And again, that's because of, you know, his involvement with Nightmare on Elm Street Part 6. But, you know, that's a story for another time. That's more of a Boogeyman's Closet story. But yeah, you hear this all the time. You hear this with comic book movies where, like, initially when they were first starting out, the producers were like, well, they can't have those costumes. Like, that's why X-Men have the black sleek costumes, because, you know, spandex doesn't look right on screen. It's like, well, we've proven again and again you can get away with comic accurate costumes if you fucking really try. I feel like the first Spider-Man movie was the first time that that happened with Spider-Man, not so much Green Goblin, where he looked like a Power Ranger. But my point is that producers often get involved. And I know you, when you had pitched this to me, you had specifically mentioned the bullshit that Kevin Smith dealt with on the Superman, was it Superman Reborn or whatever, the Superman movie that he was supposed to do with Nicolas Cage, where they were like, but does he have to fly? You know, it was like, it's Superman. Like,
I know.
What the fuck?
Yeah, Kevin Smith talks about that in his An Evening with Kevin Smith that you know, you can find it online. You know, I watched it on DVD years ago. And yeah, he goes through all these great stories about his ups and downs in the movie industry and all the weird, you know, encounters and weird stories. He has this great story he tells about going to Prince's house, like whatever. But
yes.
The one that you mentioned and I thought of was while we were talking, I was like, oh yeah, it's exactly like this. Like, let's do the Kevin Smith thing where he tells a story about some producer that he was working with that was producing that best, yeah, Superman Unlimited or Unleashed or whatever the fuck it was supposed to be called. Yeah, and it was like he questioned, does he have to fly? He looks silly. Does he have to wear that costume? Does he need to have the S on his chest?
Yeah.
And it was like, those are all the things that make him Superman. Like, of course he does. And, you know, that story famously ends with, you know, Kevin Smith relating this anecdote that the producer in question was insisting that the movie end with a giant spider in the third act. And Kevin Smith just ultimately was like, he just pulled the plug on his involvement with the project. He just couldn't do it. And then he was like, you know, like, lo and behold, I go to the movies like the following summer or whatever. And, you know, to see the new Will Smith vehicle, Wild Wild West. And what shows up in the third act but a giant fucking spider? You know?
So that producer got his way, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, oh, that's so perfect. But like, what if Kevin Smith had put the giant spider in the third act? Like, how funny would that movie have been? Like, awful, but like hilariously awful. You know?
Exactly.
And that's what got me so excited. I was like, oh yeah, I want to do this so bad. And then you pointed out too that, like, you see that all the time in the sequels, like Ghostbusters 2 and Gremlins 2, and even Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Secret of the Ooze, where the second movie, while the first one might not have not been for kids, the second movie is definitely for kids. Like, they really lean into making it safer and sillier and, you know, more cartoonish. And I, again, I'm like, again, that sounds fun.
Right?
So immediately, the first movie that I thought of when I was thinking, let's take a perfect movie and fucking ruin it, the first movie that popped into my head was RoboCop.
No! You're gonna ruin it!
Let's be honest, it's a fucking perfect movie.
It's an absolutely spotless, flawless, impeccable movie. I will brook no argument.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's like that meme of that guy sitting at the table in the park with the sign that's, you know, and it just says like, RoboCop is a perfect movie. Prove me wrong. And it's like, not going to happen. Can't. Not going to happen. Like,
well, and that's the thing. Like, I've mentioned this on multiple podcasts, but like, truly, RoboCop is one of, like, I know I'm known as the horror guy, but like, this is one of those comfort movies for me. I will, back when we still changed channels, ask your parents, kids, like when we had to flick through stations to find stuff. If I was flicking through the stations and I landed on a channel that RoboCop was playing on, I don't care what point it was in the movie. I set the fucking remote down. Like, I'm watching it, you know, and it's like, and I still, before we decided to do this, I had already watched RoboCop 3 times this year and we're only in April.
Like, yeah, I know I've seen it at least twice because it's a comfort movie. We don't really flip channels anymore, like you said. But yeah, it was the remote down movie, you know, and I'm sure you and I can both rattle off 20 of those easily without pausing in between, you know.
Absolutely.
And now it becomes the background movie. It's the movie where I'm, you know, doing the dishes or the laundry or, you know, sitting on the back porch with the dogs or something. And I want something in the background. So you just put a movie on. And I love to do it when I'm making dinner because I can't really pay attention to it. But I have an open concept living room kitchen. So when I'm making dinner, I can, you know, see the big TV. And mm-hmm. I love to just put a movie on that I've seen 1,000 times and just enjoy it, just revisit it. And so, yeah, I literally did that with RoboCop over the last 2 days. Of course, I knew that we were going to be doing this episode. But instead of having to rewatch the movie, because I don't need to rewatch the movie, like I know it inside and out, but I was like, I'm just going to put it on the background every chance I get just to kind of get into the vibe, you know, get the juices flowing and remind myself about some of the cool ideas. But I'm just endlessly in awe of how perfect that movie is.
Absolutely. It's, you know, and even, and we could go on about this, but even like the rest of the franchise is solid. Yes, it's diminishing returns as many, you know, many films, film franchises are, but like, they're all solid movies. And even like the TV show, like I was telling you off the air, like I watched the Prime Directive's TV show and I was like, I didn't hate it. It was, I mean, yeah, it's low budget. It's made for TV. There's a lot of glaring problems, but story wise, it's still pretty solid. But you had mentioned the whole thing about how the sequel is often made for kids. And again, RoboCop being what it is, Part 2 was not only aimed at kids in a way like, let's make it less violent, let's make it a little more cartoonish, like let's soft pedal the realistic violence that Part 1 had. Let's put more fantasy violence. By the time we got to Part 3, it was like, it was a fucking comic book. But the thing with Part 2, they not only do that, but then they parody, like they wink at the camera within the movie where they have the focus group at OCP that is like, can he talk to kids about drugs? You know, I always see him using guns, blah, blah, blah. And like, they literally have the fucking producer focus group trying to like corral RoboCop in. So like, they're in on the joke in this franchise and I fucking love it.
Absolutely. And they've always been in on the joke. That's one of the things that makes the original RoboCop from 1987 such a great movie. There's a million reasons, but one of the reasons is that it's such an amazing satire of American society, the politics of the time that it came out in the Reagan era, and just pop culture in general. It's always been tongue-in-cheek. You know, as a kid, I didn't understand why the commercials, you know, for like, you know, the SUX 6000 or, you know, the Nukem board game. I didn't know why they were in the movie other than it just gives context to the type of world that RoboCop lives in. And at the time, that's what I appreciated it for. You only get to see a limited amount of the world in, you know, gritty, dirty old Detroit. So having these television commercials and news programs, it really gives you an idea of what this future is like. And then as an adult, I realized that all of those were jokes. they were all poking fun at some aspect of commercialism, you know, the politics, you know, certain leaders of the day, even down to like the callousness of, you know, primetime news when they report on the death of two American presidents by laser fire and don't even name the presidents, just go right to the next story, you know?
Yep.
It's like, I love that.
Oh, it's fantastic. And this is something like, now I know this movie did get remade in 2014, and I'm one of the remake apologists. I've said that many times. Like, I actually do enjoy the 2014 remake. It's not a Paul Verhoeven movie. It's not the same feeling. It's not the same world that the that the RoboCop of the 80s lived in. But it's still a really good movie. But there's one gigantic, glaring flaw to me in that film that the first movie just, it gets so well. In the remake, when Alex is remade, they save his hand. You know, yep. He's got a hand, he's got a face, and he's got some internal organs. He's pretty much like organs in a jar attached to a spinal cord and a face, and then he's got a hand that they have like synthetic nervous system hooked up to. Now, I get it. You know, they're trying to show that he still has a human touch and all that. Like, you know, this way he can comfort his wife, comfort his kid. Like, I get why they did it. I understand the reasoning. But there's such a poignant moment in the first movie where they make a point when RoboCop is being built. They're like, we were able to save the arm. And then I forget his name, but Miguel Ferrer's character is like, he's like, no, lose the arm. He's like, the whole outer shell is supposed to be titanium. Lose the arm. And they're like, but, you know, we can save it. And then the other guy's like, he goes, what do you think? And he's like, well, he signed the waiver. He's legally dead. We can do what we want. And he goes, lose the arm. And then they prep him for surgery. So literally, he's a fucking product. He's no longer human. And I love that they did that, that they showed that corporate America had taken such deep root that even people were products. And in the 2014 remake, they kind of lose that dystopian future aspect with that scene. So it's just one of the things I wanted to comment on about how much I love the original.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, Bob Morton says, I thought we agreed on total body prosthesis.
Yes, that's it, Bob. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I just watched that was one of the last scenes that I saw before I came in here in my, like, you know, multiple loop that I've had it on for the last couple of days. But yeah, I would agree. And I don't want to critique the remake too much here because I want to get into our own story. But yeah, I would agree with that. I think I liked everything about RoboCop 2014. You know, it's a little glossy, maybe not exactly to my taste all the time. I like what they did with it. I think it was, you know, a solid movie, but I think it suffers for me in the same way that a lot of other remakes do, like the Friday the 13th remake, where it didn't need to be a remake. It could have just been a sequel. Even if you wanted to do that thing that they did with like Scream and Halloween, where you just call it the same title as the original, they could have just called it RoboCop without any qualifier, you know, like RoboCop 4 or whatever. And I would have been fine with it. It could have been a sequel if the main character's name wasn't Alex Murphy. Literally, if they had called that character anything else, this could have been a sequel because nothing in the movie contradicts the 1987 version. And the technology is so much more advanced and different that it could have just been the evolution of, you know, the security concepts program decades later in a different political environment, a different military environment. And, you know, the sort of criticism of the original program has been forgotten with time. And now there's a new guy who, for whatever reason, is just as good of a candidate as the original Alex Murphy was, you know, and you know, maybe there's some quality to these two characters that makes them, you know, uniquely qualified to work well with the biosynthetics. And, you know, that could have been an interesting plot point. But again, all they had to do is change the character's name and it's a sequel.
Yeah. And honestly, I think you could have changed a few story elements and made that into a fantastic sequel or like a legacy sequel where like none of the characters from the original are around. Like this is decades later, like you said, and it is the advancement of security concepts. And they could have done something with like we see in that remake where the Ed 209 units and I forget what the humanoid units were called, but like the little like, you know, bipedal humanoid robots that they had. They could have even done something like they needed to have like a hive mind where it's like we need a human mind to kind of connect with all of these and control it. So we need to make like the sergeant, like the overkill to the Cobra Bats type of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what that character could have started off as. And then remembering his humanity, fighting back against the system. I think that would have been a great idea. Like it totally would have reinvigorated the franchise with a new concept, a new idea in a new future. But again, you know, Hollywood always goes safe and they go back to the well, kind of like what we do.
Yeah, exactly. Always back to the well, right? Although we're not going to make this into a horror movie. I'll just say that.
No. It might be horrific, but it won't be a horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there's maybe some lessons we could take from the existing remake that we can kind of keep in the back of our brains because, you know, our remake that or whatever we're going to do today that would fall probably into the VHS era rather than, you know, 2014, which is way beyond that period. So I think what I want to do today is do a remake, but have our remake happen within the VHS era. And so this 2014 movie, it could still exist, but in our alternate reality, there was another remake that happened prior that, you know, it was just bad, real bad, like real bad, to the point where people would have loved the 2014 remake because it would have been like a return to form. But what I was going to say is there's some things they do in the 2014 movie that we could kind of have in the back of our brains because we have the insight of future knowledge that, you know, the VHS era producers wouldn't have had. But I think it's interesting you mentioned sort of that scene where they keep his hand and all that because it does change the theme of the movie. You know, I think the theme, the overarching theme of the RoboCop 87 is that it's about, you know, again, corporations productizing everything. They productize hospitals, the military, the police, right down to actual human beings become product for these mega corporations. And it's a commentary on the rise of big business and the greed is good culture of the 80s. Whereas by 2014, now we're in like the smartphone era. I think what you get with Gary Oldman's character and the way that he approaches, you know, the RoboCop that he's created in is that this movie isn't about people being productized. It's about the loss of humanity to technology. That technology is making us less human, and RoboCop is this extreme version of that. And the characters in the movie are working to retain the humanity that they have left in this, you know, unstoppable trend toward technology becoming everything.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So anyway, we're not going to have any big, big profound themes like that. If we have any theme, it's going to be that like robots are awesome and violence is fun.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I want to. You mentioned still putting it in the VHS era, and that was specifically because if anyone who's listening that lived through the late 90s and early 2000s, there was a glut of remakes. And I'm not saying that they were bad. There was a lot that were fucking fantastic. Some I hold up like alongside the original in their quality. For example, Dawn of the Dead, you know, the remake of Dawn of the Dead. I love the original Dawn of the Dead. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. The remake, I think, is a fantastic fucking movie. Like, I also really love that movie. And it's one of those things where it's like, I don't like it better than the original, but I like it almost on the same level. You know, the same thing with like film, like the Friday the 13th remake you mentioned. I know that was later. It was like 2009, I think. But it's a solid entry and it fits right into the franchise. Then you have some that completely disregard the original content or the source material, like House of Wax. I do love that movie. I think it's a lot of fun, but it completely disregards the Vincent Price House of Wax and Night at the Wax Museum that came before it. It does its own thing. It basically takes from Tourist Trap and does its own fucking movie with it. 13 Ghosts is another great example. 13 Ghosts does an entirely different story from the original, but I would argue is better than the original. But my point is, source material be damned. Producers Absolutely. Were doing whatever the fuck they wanted at the time. And that's what we're trying to get at. So to stop burying the lead, the concept, do you want to give this to the listeners? Or you want me to run it off?
Yeah, let me jump into it. It's part of the reason why I took the time to talk about our previous improv challenges where we did the Mousetrap episode from, you know, randomly generated elements to bringing our horror hosts in to challenge us was that in order to not just have this be a complete free-for-all where we just get out of control trying to, you know, use every toy in the toy box to make a silly RoboCop movie. I thought, like, or you had the idea of let's put some limitations around it. And that was immediately the thing that clicked that made this work in my head. Like, yes, this is exactly what we're going to do. So the concept here is that you and I are Hollywood script writers who have been tasked with writing a remake of RoboCop, you know, in this early 2000s era, like 2000, 2002-ish, you know, toward the tail end of the VHS era. And, you know, in the wake of all these other remakes, you know, we're going to go back to the original. We have to tell a similar story, but not exactly the same because it is a remake and not just like refilming like Psycho. But we're working for a terrible movie studio with completely clueless execs who have no concept of how to make a movie. And we are being given just the worst possible notes, you know, notes in the, if you're not familiar with the term, it's when, you know, exactly when a producer says something like, yeah, but you know, why can't I have this? And why can't I have that? And like, you know, what'd be really great. You should put this in the movie. You know, my niece loves Barbie, put Barbie in the movie, or, you know, dumb stuff like that. And it's like, but because, you know, we don't have the money, the producers have the money, you know, we get stuck in like, you know, the Kevin Smith position of like, okay, I guess, you know, I guess we could put that in there. But again, there's so many great ideas. So we're getting these producer notes, but in order to not, you know, in order to put some restrictions around it, you and I both came up with a list of five dumb things that would ruin a RoboCop movie. And we're going to do some random number generation to pick at least six of those total 10 together, like at least three of yours, at least three of mine. And we're, you know, to see what we can put in the movie, to see if we can salvage something watchable out of what should be a steaming pile of producer shit.
So we have our producer notes, and I'll be honest, on my list, I wrote a list of five, and the one right on there at the very bottom, it just says the note I have is may God have mercy on our souls. So, because these are absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Oh God. Okay. So I think the basic premise needs to be the same. And again, not to belabor the point, because if you haven't seen RoboCop, why are you listening to this? Go watch fucking RoboCop. Jesus.
Right?
Like, haven't you gotten the point? It's been like 20 minutes of us talking about how amazing RoboCop is. But the basic concept is, you know, Alex Murphy, seasoned cop from kind of a safe neighborhood in Detroit, gets transferred to the worst neighborhood in old Detroit and gets killed by a gang of thieves and drug dealers on his first day at the new job, except he's not 100% dead, just gets declared dead. He gets productized by OCP, Omni Consumer Products, the corporation that runs the police force in Detroit, get transform him into a cyborg super cop, you know, complete with a handheld machine gun, who then, you know, is put on the streets to, as Bob Morton, the head of Security Concepts, OCP, says in the movie, that they're going to clean up crime in old Detroit in 40 days. That was their guarantee, except that RoboCop, aka Alex Murphy, the police officer inside the machine, he starts having memories of the gang that killed him, of Clarence Boddicker and his goons that shot him to pieces. And so he starts on a revenge mission to go and find these guys and either arrest or kill them to get them off the streets to get the revenge for killing Alex Murphy. And then ultimately, like, you know, finds his humanity and goes from being Murphy to RoboCop back to Murphy again, wins the day, and they play that amazing theme song on the closing credits, right? So that's my super fast version of RoboCop. So if we do the same thing, or, you know, at least the same premise at the beginning, like awesome human cop gets turned into super robot cop, and then like we'll kind of see where it goes from there, you know, right. What our producers let us get away with. So do you want to go first on the first one, or do you want me to go first? Let's pick at least one to get us going.
All right. You go first. You go first, since it was your idea. So.
Okay. Okay. So I have a couple that I really hope I get later on because they'll be silly to start with now.
Right.
But let's see what happens. Random generator, spinning. Okay, so I got musical number. Okay.
Oh my God.
So we're going to have to hold on to this one for a little while, I think. But the idea here is, and what I was specifically thinking when I wrote it down was not necessarily that characters break out in song like it's a musical, but in these like 90s movies, there would just be these random musical numbers, usually rap songs in the middle of the movie. Like in, I mentioned Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, where like Vanilla Ice just does the ninja rap, you know?
Yep. But also, the original Ninja Turtles had that fucking Ninja Turtle theme song that was the rap that told the entire plot of the movie. Like, every line in the song was the next thing that happened.
Yes. And I feel like, for some reason, like, the rap from Teen Witch is, like, in my head, you know? And it's
oh my God, top that. Top that.
Or there'd just be, like, a random, like, rap battle or something. And, yeah, it's – so, yeah, we can't start the movie with that. But now we know that at some point in our RoboCop movies, you know, our producer note says, you know, it would be great if RoboCop did a rap, you know, for the kids.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. So we will have a musical number at some point in the film, or it could even be one of those things where we have like a montage where we see RoboCop being RoboCop out there on the streets and we have a song about what he's doing happening. You know, like we have the RoboCop rap over top of the montage.
Okay. I love this idea, but what makes it even worse, because I'm here to ruin this fucking movie, right? So I'm already picturing a scene where RoboCop is like, you know, before he goes on the revenge mission, when he's just on the streets patrolling and the audience is getting to see what RoboCop does. Like in the real movie, you see him, you know, like, you know, break up a hostage situation, visit some kids at school, you know, stuff like that. But there has to be the scene where he's like in this terrible neighborhood and he like stops, you know, somebody selling drugs and some like, you know, like 12-year-old kid is just like, hey man, like, you don't know what life is like in this neighborhood, man. Like, we're just trying to make some money to feed our families, man. You know? And then, and then like the kid just does some little rap, like, you know, like, I'm little G and you don't know me, you know, something like that. and then you have RoboCop just turn to him and you see his like, you know, LED screen inside of his head, like he sees on his visor, where instead of saying like a rest mode, it says like, you know, like, I don't know, should I say like rap, like, yeah, exactly, like rap battle, right? Like, it'll be like, you know, make connections with the, you know, with the civilians, you know, equals rap battle, like blinking, and then he just goes like, I'm Alex Murphy and I'm on the scene.
Yes. It should be like youth relation moment or something. It's like, yeah. You know, rap, you know?
And then all these really terribly dressed gang members that don't look real gang members. They're like Hollywood gang members with like, you know, bandanas on, and they're like, they're dressed for like the wrong subculture. Like ghetto kids dressed like punk rockers, you know what I mean? Like, yep. It's like these terrible movie gangs, and they all kind of come out and they all start rapping with him, you know. They're like, I can't come up with battle raps off the top of my head, but you know, just they're basically like rapping at him, like, you know, like you're a cop, you ain't welcome here. You know, and then he's like, you know, I may be a robot, but I'm just like you, you know, whatever.
Boy.
And then they, exactly. And then like little G's got to be like, yeah, man, this guy's got a point, you know, like you don't need to smoke that joint.
Oh my God.
And then, but it's got to like culminate in like all these like, you know, gang kids, like, yeah, like, we get it, man. We get it. You're cool. You're just trying to clean up the streets. And then they all have this like choreographed, like, you know, number. And they start going into like, you know, like, you're down with OCP?
Yeah, you know me.
Oh my
God. Oh Lord, this is ridiculous. Okay, so we definitely know our rap battle is somewhere in this movie. I guess I'm up, so let's see. 1 through 5, random generate. oh, no. Okay. So my third one, I got number 3 on my list here. We have replaced the realistic crime and gangs with over-the-top cyberpunk-style gangs called Junkers who have cybernetic attachments.
Yes, absolutely.
So we're going to have, instead of having like the very realistic and scary violence of Clarence Boddicker and his gang, we will have this over the top cartoonish gang who's out there, you know, doing all the crime in old Detroit. So they're the ones selling drugs, and of course it's got to be some fake movie drug like Nuke was in part two. You know, they'll be out there selling the drugs, but they're also like modifying their body by like adding like buzzsaw hands and shit.
Well, I mean, this is actually kind of cool, right? Because you think about the technology that must exist for a cyborg like RoboCop to be built. It almost would be interesting to have some character in the movie like make the observation that, you know, RoboCop, it's like these junkers, but like we did it, you know, with like corporate money. We did it right, you know, and now we're gonna, you know, we're gonna fight fire with fire, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, like this could actually fit into the plot of the movie. But the thing is, like, one of the things that makes RoboCop so great is that it is still grounded in reality. It has this fantasy element of like a cybernetic law enforcement officer, but all of the bad guys are still running around using fucking shotguns and, you know, handguns and machine guns and shit. The only over the top gun is that weird like sniper rifle that explodes everything that they have at the end of the movie. But everything else is very realistic. Violence. But again, this being like the producers trying to be like, do we really need all that violence? Can't he shoot lasers? You know, like that kind of a thing. Like the 1980s with G.I. Joe. It's like,
oh, yeah,
oh no, exactly. They got to have laser guns, you know, and it doesn't kill him. It just stuns them, you know, like that type of thing. So, yeah. So junkers for the gangs.
Okay, Junker. And I like the idea, too. Like, let's go with the this is going to be a PG-rated remake, too, right?
Oh, so yeah, absolutely. PG-13 at worst.
Yeah, they absolutely have to have these like, you know, stun gun kind of things. And even RoboCop's going to be using a lot of like, you know, tasers and like non-lethal shit. And like, yeah, he has a gun, but all he ever does with it is like, let me like shoot this metal sign off the building to like trap you on the sidewalk until we,
right.
until we can come and arrest you. You know, like he doesn't actually shoot people with it.
It's funny you mention that because there might be something else on my list that involves something like that.
Okay. So I think... We could tell the same story at the beginning. If we start with, again, we replace Boddicker with these junkers, and they got to live in that same kind of like factory part of town, like Boddicker and his crew were hanging out in. They're kind of like, you know, scavenging for like metal parts and shit, you know, mm-hmm. in these like abandoned like steel factories, whatever they were. I was going to wait and not do all of these at the beginning, but I don't know that we really have like a hook yet.
Yeah, no, I feel like we have to set up at least the majority of the maybe like save one or two for later. But like, I feel like we need to at least get a couple of these in there so we know the pieces we're working with.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about this for a while, and I'm totally fine with not necessarily telling a whole story beginning, middle, and end. If we could just kind of like build the vibe and like let. You know, hopefully you guys out there listening are like coming along for this ride, and you know, you can kind of put the pieces together. If we don't necessarily have a beginning, middle, and end, we can just kind of, you know, have you imagine what a RoboCop PG-rated RoboCop with a rap battle would be like. But okay, so it's my turn again. So again, I'm kind of hoping that I don't get like two of these, because they're like the rap battle where they're silly, but also like they would come later on as like set pieces rather than. I'm hoping for a plot point. So fingers crossed. Let's see if I can win the lottery here on a plot point. And here it goes. Oh, thank God. Okay. I got one of the two that I was hoping for. Okay. So my plot point that I think hopefully will solve this problem for us is RoboCop has to win back the love of his son.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, and what I'm thinking is movies like The Santa Claus and Jack Frost, you know, the one with Michael Keaton, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like you have this estranged father or deadbeat dad who isn't like close with his family. Hell, even like Mrs. Doubtfire kind of falls into this. And then like, you know, the dad has to like prove himself to like, you know, let his son know that like, hey, you know, life might be weird, but I still love you, Jimmy.
Yep. And I mean, in a way that makes sense, though, to this franchise, because they didn't do that in the remake. But there was that thing where the kid was still obsessed with like wanting to see his dad, even though his dad is now this cyborg. But he was afraid of him. You know, like they played with that a little bit in the remake. So yeah, I think that actually fits really well in this world. Like I feel like we can do something with.
Absolutely. That's why I was like, oh, thank God. I'm so happy I got that one. right. I even put it like number one on my list. And like, it's random. So like, I don't know if putting it at number one like changes the odds, but I was still like, just in case, you know?
Right.
Because it was, again, I had two or three of these that are like plot points and the other ones are just goofy. But okay, so I said Jimmy like a joke, but actually, Jimmy was Alex Murphy's son's name. They mention it briefly in the scene where Alex, the human cop, is like spinning his gun and practicing, and you know, Lewis catches him and he talks about, oh, my son Jimmy watches this, the show, the TJ Laser, and this laser guy who does this every time he takes out a bad guy.
That's really funny, like, because I just assumed like, oh yeah, no, because his son is named Jimmy. Like, that's funny that was an accident. I love
it. It was just like, what, it's like Billy or, you know, Mike, which you use like all for all of your characters. So it's
absolutely
just like it's a random character name in my head. Like, everyone is just like Jimmy and Sally, you know.
Yep. And that's something that I think every writer has, is they have that stable of, I don't want to put too much thought into this name because this character isn't really important, so I'm just going to call him this, you know.
Yeah, I'm notorious on my own stories for just going in alphabetical order, like an A name, a B name, a C name, a D name, just so I don't have to think about it, you know.
Yep.
My new characters, like, where was I in the alphabet? That's okay. Funny. So in this movie, Jimmy, and thinking about RoboCop 2 as well, which obviously was around at the time. So Jimmy, his son, and really Alex's wife as well, they're estranged from him, but not because he did anything wrong. Like, he's not a neglectful dad, like, or like a workaholic dad who's never around, like in, you know, Santa Claus or whatever. In order for him to kind of win back the love of his son, I mean, yeah, he could just go introduce himself and try to convince his son that, like, you know, I am a robot, but I am still your dad, you know. But I think it would be more interesting if it was like his son has grown like angry. He's resentful. It's like grief trauma. You know, he doesn't really hate his dad, but he's like a 12-year-old kid who like lost his dad to gang violence. And now he's just like, you know, fuck the world. The world sucks. Everyone, you know, everything is shit. The world's going to hell. Why should I care? Like, you know, and he's sort of mad at his dad. Like, why'd you have to go and die, dad? You know, but like,
right.
He doesn't know how to process that. So he's just angry. He's lashing out. And
I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to say, let's examine this for a minute, because it's actually really interesting, because to think about how this would work out for this kid. So he goes through the trauma of losing his father. His father is murdered. You know, of course, OCP, the police force, everyone is like going to give news to Alex's wife and son, like, Alex died in the line of duty, you know. So they go through that mourning process, right? And then he becomes this fucking celebrity overnight. He becomes this celebrity robot. And like, yeah, okay, he's in a robotic suit. You can still, like, this is why I've never understood the whole cowl thing. Because, like, if you see somebody's face enough, even if they're wearing, like, a cover over their nose and eyes, you're still going to be able to see the features that you're familiar with. So, of course, they're going to be questioning, like, is that dad? You know, so there's going to be that thing of, like, well, why didn't he come back? Why did he go out? Why is he this famous cop? Like, why doesn't he love me? Why doesn't he care about me?
Oh, like, good. Like, he didn't come home. Yeah.
Yeah,
good.
Exactly. So it's like, he's got a second chance, but I'm not part of it. Like, that would build resentment. Of course it would.
At first I was like, when I put this on the list, I didn't know if he should know that Alex was RoboCop, that his dad was RoboCop. And I thought it might be kind of interesting if he didn't know, and then RoboCop had to sort of win him over. In that way where, like, I'm trying to think, if, you know, if you tried to get someone to like fall in love with you, but so you, like, you don't tell them that you're rich, you know, whatever.
It's
like,
right,
you don't want
right.
to kinda, you don't want to kind of, you want them to like love you for you and not because they have some preconceived notion. But I also kind of like this idea that you said where, yeah, of course he would recognize him. He would know. And it makes it even worse that he has this grief trauma because his dad, like, you know, doesn't even come home to see me. Like, he's still alive. What the fuck? But
right.
I think it, yeah. So they're going to have this, obviously, Jimmy has to be in the movie, so they're going to have this, like, strained relationship. But I definitely think it would be fun if, like, when they do, you know, kind of reconnect, and, you know, that Jimmy kind of helps Murphy become more human, you know, it kind of takes the place of Lewis, his partner, a little bit in that role. And I'm just immediately picturing there's got to be a scene at the end of the movie where, like, you know, they win the day and, like, Jimmy's there and, you know, hey, yay, Jimmy and RoboCop, like, save the day or whatever. And, you know, RoboCop does that, like, you know, gun flip thing and, like, you know, puts the gun in his leg. And that's when, you know, Jimmy looks at him and is like, yeah, you really are my dad. You know, and they kind of have this, like, heartfelt moment, you know, because.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. All right. So, oh, boy, let's see, because I have a couple on here that. Oh boy, they're not good.
Let's do one more, and then let's kind of get into, like, how do we make Jimmy fit? Let's kind of tell the story a little bit.
Okay. oh, so okay, so may God have mercy on our souls. so I got number one, and the first one on my list is that kids love monkeys. It's got to include a monkey, but not just any monkey, a cybernetic chimp that is his partner.
Robo chimp.
Oh, okay. Jesus, how the fuck are we? I don't know. Okay, I'm almost mad at myself for putting that on the list now.
Yeah. No, I think we can make this work. Hang on. Oh, shit. Something just occurred to me. This would be amazing. Okay. Okay, so light bulbs. So we go back to beginning of the movie. Tell the story a little bit, right? Same thing. The movie starts the same way. Of course, it's PG rated, so everything's a little bit glossier, a little bit happier. And, you know, nobody's, you know, swearing. The police chief isn't, like, swearing at the cops. And, you know, when Alex first sees Lewis, like, beat the shit out of her suspect. Like, when you're done, fuck around with your suspect, you know.
Right.
Maybe that scene is a little bit, you know, less violent. Maybe it's more of, like, clever, you know, like there's some suspect who's, you know, trying to get violent in the police in the police station. And instead of, like, beating the shit out of him, maybe Lewis just, like, comes in and gives him a little, like, karate kick to trip him. And he falls over, like, haha, got him, you know, easy, like easy, but sort of like, you know, it's more showy than violent. And, you know, of course, you know, Alex is like, you know, like, oh, sweet moves.
Right.
And so we fast forward through, again, the movie kind of the way it happens, but instead of then meeting up with or chasing Boddicker and his gang in that van and having that whole interaction where they're shooting at Alex and Lewis in the police car, they throw Bobby at the police car, right? It's like, again, make it a little bit less violent. And it's like, these are like the junkers in this van. And maybe they're literally just throwing, like, junk out the back of a van. They're trying to stop the police car by throwing, like, you know, like, bike tires and stuff at it, you know. So it's like,
right,
it's kind of,
we could even have Lewis be like, ah, damn junkers.
Yeah, exactly. And Alex is like, junkers, like, you know, I heard of these guys, like, what's their deal? And of course, you know, she's going to explain it, you know, that they're these, like, oh, there's these, you know, these punks, and they, you know, they found a way to, like, you know, replace body parts, and now it's like this become this addiction, you know, like, you know, every time they get hurt, it's like they put, like, a chainsaw on the end of their arm or something, you know. It's like, we can't make it too gruesome, but yeah, it's got to sound cool, you know.
Right. So, like, she's defensively driving and dodging the junk but explaining to the audience what the fuck the junkers are.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, there's gotta be this scene where, like, they're not really, like, shooting real guns, so maybe Alex tries to, like, climb out of the car and he's, like, surfing on the hood of it because he's gonna, like, jump over to the van right when this, like, junker guy leans out, and yeah, he's got, like, a chainsaw on his hand. And then you have this, like, little interaction where it's like Alex is balanced on the hood of a cop car with this chainsaw guy's arm, like, gripped in his hands, trying to keep it from his face, and they're, like, back and forth, and then, like, the vehicles pull apart and it's like, whoa, you know. It's like this, like, silly interaction. And of course, the, you know, the junker has managed to, like, get away, right? They knock Alex back to the point where he almost falls off the car. Lewis has to, like, do a defensive maneuver to, like, swing the door open so he falls in the car instead of off the car because, you know, physics, whatever.
Right.
weird cartoon physics. And but the junkers get away. They follow them to, like, this old factory. Same thing. They go in. They're going to find them. They split up. You know, Lewis goes off in one direction. Gets taken out temporarily. Alex goes in, meets up with, like, we can still call him Clarence because I think that's a funny name, you know, like, you know,
for your main bad guy, Clarence.
Oh, yeah.
Dick, come on, that's good.
it's so good. Yeah, so, you know, Clarence the junker comes out, and, you know, and maybe they're just kind of, like, making jokes, like, oh, like, you know, like, you know, you don't need those hands, like, here, let us show you what it's like to be one of us. And then it, like,
ooh, it, yeah,
like, But instead of like being all violent, it like cuts to black, right? And then the very next scene is like they're in like the emergency helicopter coming down to the hospital, and like they load Alex out. You see he's all like bloody and messed up. He's got, has like a sheet over most of his body. His head is all, you know, maybe bloody, but like his eyes are staring at the sky. And we do the same kind of thing. We just avoid all the really, really gory violence, you know?
Well, hold on, let's backtrack a minute to that exact scene. So we have, I love what you said there, like, you know, oh, you don't need that hand. Let me show you what it feels like to have, you know, or to be like one of us, that whole thing. And then just kind of pan to the wall where you see the shadow, and maybe you see like the one dude with a chainsaw arm, like pull the ripcord or whatever and lift his chainsaw up and then come down, and you see, you hear Alex scream and like see the shadow throw himself back. So we do that, but I think we should end that scene with them like dropping a giant pile of junk on Alex. And here's why, because that's how he, you know, takes, like at the end of the movie, they do that to Alex with Clarence, like where he's pinned and then he does the fucking USB spike into Clarence's throat. what if we flip that and we do that here, where they finish him off by dropping a giant pile, like a crane pile of like pipes and girders and old electronics and random bullshit, and like crush him under that. And then that's what Alex does at the end of the movie to Clarence. Instead of stabbing him with the USB spike, they're like, ah, you know what? I'm going to fucking bury you and junk you, junker. Like that type of a thing.
Yeah. And of course, that would be like open up for a sequel. You know, there'd be like that stinger at the end of the credits where you have that like hand that comes up out of the grave, but it's like the hand that comes up out of like the pile of junk.
Yes! Of course. And it's going to be like the metal like cyborg hand, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and of course, just like in the real movie, when Lewis like wakes up and she comes to find Alex, and she's on the other side of like a window or a door grate, and she sees what's happening but can't stop it. So the same thing, like Lewis can kind of come back and she sees, you know, these junkers. And again, since we're cutting away, we can see that shadow. Then we can go to Lewis's face and watch her react to what's happening to Alex without really seeing it, and then cut back to like the pile of junk, and yeah, and then, you know, the junkers laugh and leave, you know, they're like, let's get out of here. They don't know Lewis is okay. And then yeah, Lewis goes out there and she's, you know, digging through the junk, and then we fade to black, and then we fade back in, and they're on the helicopter, they get into the hospital, they declare him dead, and then we do that whole montage scene where it's like he's waking up as, you know, like RoboCop. You know, that whole sequence with like the scientist and Bob Morton comes in. I fucking love this guy, you know,
right?
But you know, not maybe it's more, maybe not with the F word, but you know, that whole thing.
Well, we should also do the whole Ed 209 scene in the boardroom, where we have Dick like introducing the Ed 209, and maybe we don't have the same brutal death for Mr. Kenny, like. Maybe it's something like maybe he still kills him, but again, it's like off camera or something like that. But one of the things we should have in that sequence is show like not only the Ed 209 failure. One of the things I'm thinking with Ed 209, like, and like stop me if you have an idea for this already. But one of the things I was thinking is the fact that Clarence is working for Dick. Dick is making stuff like Ed 209. Clarence is already a junker. He's already addicted to modifying his body and changing it with cybernetics. What if he is given control at some point in the movie over the Ed 209 units, and he can control them either with his mind or via like plug his fucking arm into the control station and control the Ed 209s. And then like even at the end of the movie, instead of having like the big like sniper rifle guns, what if he's just modified himself with the Ed 209? And he's like stomping around as one of those, something like that. But I think during this sequence, during the boardroom sequence, we have to introduce the cyber chimps. So what if it's not a chimp? What if it's like a little, like a capuchin or something, like a little fucking monkey, like the little spider monkeys? And what if they're like, they're meant to be like helpers? So they could be like, we had a lot of success with our, you know, our whatever we want to call them. I just keep calling Robo Monkey, but I'm sure there's a better name out there. But we have a lot of success with these helper monkeys, and they're basically helping the infirm, helping the sick. So it would make sense that when we create RoboCop, they're going to have this little like, you know, helper monkey trying to like help him through the beginnings of learning himself as a robot. But we can have like, we can have some fun stuff with the monkey.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. They're copuchins.
Yes. Oh my God.
Okay. So let's do this. Cause I definitely had an idea too, for how the monkey could be specifically Alex's partner, even when he's like becoming more human. Let me come back to that in a minute. But no, I like this idea. Go back to the beginning of the movie. We open up with this boardroom scene, like you said, where we introduce Ed 209, and instead of taking down Kenny, whatever the guy's name was. Yeah, it would be interesting if when Dick is giving his speech, he's talking about all of the different like types of urban pacification units that they're creating, you know, from the capuchin monkeys, you know, to maybe they show that they've outfitted these like tanks that some of the police precincts are using, you know, and, you know, hell, we can even have it, you know, that Morton, maybe he mentions RoboCop and then Dick is like, still in the works. You know, he kind of brushes it off. Like they don't want to talk about the RoboCop program or whatever. You know, we can kind of change the direction a little bit so that when Bob does, you know, step up and say, no, RoboCop, that's the secret. Like, again, we kind of realize that it's one of like several things that they're trying. Yeah, so with Anto 9, we could do, again, the same thing where it's like he shoots that guy and then, you know, we just kind of like cut away and it's like, oh, shit, like what happened? Or it could be more physically violent than the artillery, you know, violence. Like maybe he doesn't shoot the shit out of him. Maybe Anto 9 like picks him up, you know, like you've been placed under arrest, but he doesn't understand it's violence. And then you see, you know, again, that trick where like the shadow on the wall, you see like, Kenny just gets like cracked in half because the Anto 9 tried to pick him up, but like he wasn't gentle at all. And instead of gun hands, he just has these big, you know, like robot hands. He picks the dude up and like crushes him. And everyone in the boardroom is just like, ew, you know, he like popped like a grape, you know,
I'm picturing like three big, like almost flat metal fingers that can kind of like, almost kind of like picture Hellboy's hand. Like how he's got kind of like those flattish stone fingers. Picture that out of metal. And then like on top of the wrists have the dual mounted Gatling gun cannons that he had. So like he's got these big, like almost like how a raptor holds its hands, how they're kind of like positioned down. And then he's got the guns on top of them. But yeah, so like we see the thing where it's like you have 15 seconds to comply. We do that whole sequence. And then, you know, they're freaking out trying to stop it. You see Mr. Kenny kind of spazzing out. Maybe like Ed 209's tracking him around the room as he's trying to hide amongst the crowd. And like people push him back out. And then you just see the arm reach out and grab him. And then we see the shadow on the wall and we hear the crack. And then everyone's like, oh, you know, and then we hear the wah, 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 and it like powers down.
Yeah. You know, like drops Kenny on the ground, you know, clunk, you know, yep. It's like, yeah. No, perfect. Oops. Yeah. Oops. We kind of, and so this way we change the violence of the Ed 209 sequence while at the same time introducing the fact that yes, there's a human version of this. And yes, there's like a monkey version of this. So then, you know, we cut back to the other story that we already said. We already, you know, walked all the way up through Alex becoming RoboCop. And then after he becomes RoboCop, there's that really cool sequence where, you know, they walk him into the police station. They show his command chair. They show him in like the firing range with his fucking gun. You know, look at that fucking gun. And, you know, they give him a card. He catches the keys in midair. Like that whole sequence is so badass. And so like maybe like during that sequence, like we introduce as he's trying to leave, they're like, oh, wait, like, you know, we haven't introduced you to your partner. And then maybe just give him like a split second where he's like stops and does that like Frankenstein sort of like head tilt, huh? Kind of
right
somewhere in the Murphy part of his brain. He's like, Lewis, like my partner. But then, like, they bring out, like, one of these, like, fucking, like, little, like, capuchin monkey things. And they're, you know, like, I don't know what they would call it. It would be, like, Ed 209. It would, like, you know, be Bill 209 or something stupid, you know? And then it would, like, jump on his shoulder. And, like, maybe it's like, little tail plugs into the back of RoboCop's head or some completely unnecessary like mechanical thing just to make it look like it's, you know, real kind of freaky and robotic. And then, you know, they leave. Right. And
right. It could even be something like it's a mapping system or like a almost like a GPS unit that like attaches to him. You know, something like just it enhances Murphy's abilities type of thing. But yeah, it should be like the B3X or something like that. And like code name Bubbles, like something absolutely ridiculous, like have a call sign and then a code name. And during that sequence, we could have him like, you know, after the monkey attaches itself to him, we could have it like have him walk by Lewis and have that moment of like, there's his original partner, and have her be like, you know, Murphy, like that question.
Oh, yeah, this is perfect. So I do want to touch back on Lewis for a second, or come back to that in a minute, I should say. But yeah, Alex leaves the precinct again, just like in the regular movie. And we kind of go through this sequence of now he's like patrolling. Like, what's he going to do? And it doesn't have to be exactly the same as what we saw in the movie because we're remaking it. But, you know, we saw him again break up like a hostage situation with the mayor. You know, we saw him stop a convenience store robbery, one of my favorite scenes in the movie. You know, and so we can kind of come up with those. We don't necessarily have to do that right now, but there's going to be this, not a montage necessarily, but just a sequence of showing RoboCop and, you know, Bubbles on patrol, like stopping crimes that are obviously like more family friendly than what we got to see in the 87 version.
I got to quickly comment. You mentioned that that convenience store sequence, and I'm trying to look him up real quick, but the actor who plays the robber in that scene, like, he always played a bad guy in the fucking 80s, and it's driving me nuts because I can't find his name. But he turns and starts shooting at RoboCop going, "Fuck me! Fuck me!" Like, he says it like 16 times. Mike Moroff, that's his name. He's always a fucking villain. He, like, in so many movies in the 80s. Oh my god. But yeah, that guy.
Oh yeah, such
a great bad guy.
I love that guy. I think I always recognize him because, oh yeah, it's the guy from RoboCop, without even realizing, oh yeah, he's actually in a bunch of other stuff. That's right. To this day, since I was 7 years old or 8 years old and saw this movie for the first time, every time something like mildly bad happens, I'm just like, ah, fuck me. You know, like,
exactly.
For like 30 years, I've been, almost 40 years, I've been saying that shit. Fucking love that sequence. But the reason I wanted to kind of mention this is because this is a great way where at the end of this little sequence of him stopping crimes is when he goes to the alley, he sees this like little drug deal happening, he breaks it up, and then like little G comes out and starts the rap battle. You know, like, that's that's kind of when we do it. We do this whole kind of silly rap battle, and then at the end of it, I don't know if we should have like little Jimmy, like, is he in the city because he like ran away and joined this gang, or are we going to find him later? Because I want to get him in the movie so we can start this character arc that they both have to have. Like, you know, I think it would be interesting if Jimmy were kind of maybe in this little gang of like little G and his guys, where maybe he kind of steps out of the alleyway at the end and kind of watches RoboCop walk away with kind of smoldering expression of like, yeah, fuck that guy. You know, that's, you know, that used to be my dad. Or I'm not sure if there's another way to get Jimmy into the movie. Like, what do you think?
I actually really like the idea of that he's part of that like little street urchin gang. But here's the thing, like, we know, because I know we're kind of hitting just the beats and kind of moving quick. We know that the actual RoboCop procedure took months. Like, you know, it took some time. I think, what did he say? Like, we could be ready and or maybe not months. He said, I think he said 40 days.
No, it was 90 days for him to have prototype ready. So it's at least 3 months.
Yeah. So, and then they had just had to wait for the perfect candidate was the whole thing, which, God, I got to comment on this. This is something that I did not even recognize as a kid and realized as, you know, a 20 something year old watching this movie, where they're talking about that program at the thing in the beginning of the movie after the Ed 209 failure. And they're like, how soon can you go to prototype? And he basically makes the comment, as soon as some, you know, poor sap volunteers, I forget how he words it, but as soon as someone volunteers, basically. And then we smash cut to Alex arriving at the police station, and he's like, you know, I transferred from such and such. And they're like, you know, oh, why'd you come here? And he's like, or is something like, why would you want to come here? And he's like, OCP is moving a lot of guys around. So they were literally repositioning high profile candidates into violent areas to try to get them killed so they could go to prototype.
Oh, shit. So you were saying, you're thinking that they're doing that on purpose. That's a really interesting theory.
I'm pretty sure they were doing it on purpose. Like, I really think that's how they did it, because why else would OCP be moving, like, good cops around to really bad areas right after he says, as soon as some poor sap volunteers?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that they're making that connection. Like, that's awesome. Yeah, it definitely seems like it would be on purpose. I think I just always assumed it was because all the cops in old Detroit were getting killed so often that they had to constantly you know, bring in more guys to like reinforce reinforce them, because those safer neighborhoods didn't really need as many cops. You know, they needed more cops in Old Detroit. And there's one sequence that they mentioned that they had five cops killed in 1 week alone.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting that they, if you're thinking that they did it on purpose, like, yeah, let's find a candidate rather than wait for a candidate. That's really good.
And the whole thing with them basically talking about like how, you know, OCP owns the cops. They keep mentioning how OCP owns the cops. And then like they talk about how he's a product and all. It's like, damn, they really were looking at human life like a fucking product that they could play with.
They really were.
But anyway, so you're saying, so we have the whole sequence where it's like they, so the family mourns, you know, mom and son, you know, mom and Jimmy mourn, they lose Alex, you know, 3 months down the line, here comes RoboCop. So how do people handle trauma? You have a couple different ways. You either, you internalize it. And I always use the Halloween original and Halloween Rob Zombie sequels to kind of prove this point. You have the original Laurie Strode, who she handled her trauma by going inward, by being afraid of everything, by cowering, by, you know, wanting the world to leave her alone. And then you have the remake Laurie Strode, who in the sequel did the opposite. And the other thing you do with trauma, where you lash out, you don't give a fuck about anything, fuck the world, and you become chaotic and destructive. And I feel like if we have mom being the, like, just kind of recoiling and going into this depression because she lost her husband, she doesn't know how to react, and her son goes into the complete opposite reaction. He starts lashing out. He starts becoming destructive. His grades start falling. He starts skipping school, starts hanging out with a tough crowd. And then when we reintroduce him into the story during this montage sequence, he's part of that little street gang. And it's like, oh, shit, look what happened to Alex's son. Like, I feel like that is not only a natural result of the story we're telling, but I feel like it actually works really well.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're totally right. And I think, again, because we're doing a remake, we can, you know, write in whatever scenes we want. I think it would be interesting if when RoboCop, you know, goes out, he becomes public. Like this whole sequence we're talking about between when he like leaves the police station for the first time, and we have this whole sequence of him stopping crimes, and we end it with the rap battle. Again, this could be a period of time. So in this sequence, in the real movie, in the 87 movie, there was a point where there's like a newscast with like RoboCop, who is he? What is he? And then they kind of talk about him going to like schools and stuff. There should be a scene here where we cut back to the police station and you see Ellen, Alex's wife, and she's like screaming hysterically at like the police chief, like, where's my husband? Like, I know that's my husband. I want to see him. Take me to him. And they're like, whoa, your husband's dead. We don't know what you're talking about. And she's like hysterical because she's like, I saw him on TV. That was Alex. And they're like, listen, lady, you're nuts. You know, and then they kind of escort her away. And like during this whole sequence where she is just making these accusations and she's kind of panicking, she could say something like, you know, we've been, you know, sick at home for, you know, months. Like we had a funeral, we buried him, and all this time he was alive. Like my son saw him on TV and ran away that night to go find him, and I haven't seen him since. I don't know where he is, and you bastards did that. You took my husband and now you took my son. You show me where he is, you know. And we kind of build this story of like, oh fuck, her son ran away. And then a couple of scenes later in this sequence, we see where he ended up.
Yeah, no, I like that. Okay, so this is kind of funny. We're actually doing exactly what we set out to do. I like, don't get me wrong, RoboCop's a perfect movie, and I don't think we're making it better, but I think we're actually playing well within the confines of what we've done.
Yeah, I mean, I think so far it's pretty good.
Do we want to throw the next random generator in?
I think we do. Was it my turn?
I think so, yeah, because I did the Robo Chimp. So, because you did music scene, I did replace realistic crime with the Junkers. Then you did the Jimmy, you know, he must win back the love of his son. And then I did the Robo Chimp. So, yeah, it would be your turn.
Okay. All right. So let's see what comes up next. Let's see.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. It's so perfect. It's so perfect, though. Wait, guess what I got?
What'd you get?
A giant spider in the third act.
No! Oh my god. I didn't even know you were going to do that. You joked about it at the start of the episode.
No.
I had no idea it was on your list.
I fucking put it on. No, but this is perfect. We already nailed it because you already said that Clarence, as the leader of the Junkers, is getting in with like Dick and his like obsession with technology, and he like wants to like be in charge of the Ed 209s. And so when we see him go in the big finale to like, you know, in the real movie, we see Clarence ask Dick for military grade weapons, right? And then we cut back and he's got these like big fucking, you know, giant 50 calibers or whatever they are. I don't know if I'm guns, you know? And so in this movie, we have, well, let's have a little bit more time to, so that by the time we see Clarence show up, it's like him and his goons, but like when his goons like get out of the van and they're like RoboCop shows up and they start fighting, you know, like Clarence, he's going to say something, you know, some one liner, like, you know, it's time, boys, or, you know, whatever. Right. And then, you know, they like go to the van and they start like pulling stuff out, and it's like they're like unfolding his like Ed 209 legs into like giant spider legs. And then, you get fucking Clarence looking like Darth Maul in, you know, in like the whatever the Clone cartoon Wars. He came back with, like, you know, spider legs, but like bigger. And his legs are like, they're made out of like, you know, big, like rough, like girders and like big scrap metal looking things, because these are the Junkers. Dude. And so they took the Ed 209 and they're like, oh, we can do this better. And they added all this shit onto it.
Oh, dude, you just gave me I'm picturing this sequence and it's really fucking cool. So, okay. So the hideout is this giant steel mill, this abandoned steel mill. Clearly the Junkers have been doing shit there. They've been, you know, creating their own little hideouts. Of course, they're gonna have all sorts of stolen tech, all sorts of tech that, you know, Dick provided them with. So they'll have some of like the, Security Concepts was the other guy, right? Bob Morton.
Yeah, so Security Concepts was a department, and Dick was the head of it, and worked in it. So Dick was Bob's boss, but then when Bob jumped in and was like, oh, I got this RoboCop program, he gets promoted to vice president. So he and Dick are now both vice presidents, but they still work in the same department.
Okay, so he's given them all this tech from Security Concepts. But I love what you said there, where they're like, we can do it better. So we modified it. But what if it's like one of those things where the final sequence, like they're fighting, you see all of the Junkers have, like, you know, instead of like weird, crappy, like homemade chainsaw and like junk cannon arms, they actually have like military grade weapons now attached to their bodies. And like at the end, like they're all fighting, they're still human looking, like still humanoid, and RoboCop, you know, gets them down to where it's just like him and Clarence, and maybe he's got Clarence wounded, and they're like in the big like makeshift lab inside of the steel mill, and have Clarence like smile at him, and he's like, you know, maybe like I'm trying to think of like how he would phrase it, but like, you know, you have no idea what I've become, or you have no idea what my real power is, like some kind of stupid villain one-liner, and have like these fucking cords like attached to his back, like shoot out of something attached to his back, and like pick him up and pull him into like this giant Ed 209 spider suit, and it's just like nice. His torso sticking up out of it, and then like have like some kind of attachment go over his head and have him speak in the Ed 209 voice and just start rushing at RoboCop.
Yeah. Yes. Like, well, and that makes the whole idea of him being crushed with like junk from like a crane later on, it makes even more sense, because, you know, he's like, what, 10, 15 feet taller than RoboCop. So their battle is going to be one-sided. And you're going to, just like in the 87 movie, when Clarence was getting the best of RoboCop, and the same thing's going to happen here. It's like, now, you know, Robo Junker is so much more powerful than Alex that, like, Alex is on the ropes. And so, you know, obviously he's got to, like, save the day at the end. But what we've done is we've jumped all the way to the end, which I love. But then we got to back up and talk about Jimmy and the Robo Monkey and Lewis a little bit more, so that we can have his like supporting cast there to help him, like, you know, teamwork.
Right, right. Okay, so, well, here, let me do my quick generate, then we'll, because this is the last of all of them. So let's see here. I got number two. What's this? Okay. All right. I don't know that this works. It's not, unfortunately, it's not one of the real funny ones. But I have on here that the chimp turns out to be a mole planted by OCP to control RoboCop.
Oh, see, that's awesome. Because I already said that we were going to see him like plug his like tail into the back of RoboCop, right? Like, we already opened up that door. That's good.
So what I'm thinking is every time because you said that the plug-in, that this even makes more sense. Every time RoboCop starts having like the like memories of his previous life or starts like getting a little bit of his humanity back, you know, they have the whole plug-in thing with the chimp to kind of be like, oh no, it's just an addition. It's an add-on. It enhances him. But in reality, it's like fighting those memories. It's fighting that programming, trying to keep him in line with his new thought process and eliminate that humanity. So maybe like at some point, maybe in the battle with the Junkers or something, that the, you know, the chimp gets damaged. And then we can have the whole thing where Murphy starts remembering more and more and more about his past. And then they fix the, you know, the little capuchin thing. They plug him back in, and then he goes back to being RoboCop. And maybe Lewis has to find a way to like, no, that's not who he was. Like, Murphy was there. What the fuck happened? And has to find a way to like basically kill the capuchin.
Yeah, no,
to bring back Murphy.
No, this is fucking awesome. And it actually gives us like a really cool backdoor way of speeding up the relationship between Jimmy and Murphy, right? She goes, check this shit out. So again, we had this whole sequence we talked about where, you know, he gets the monkey and he gears up at the police station, goes out, fights crime. You know, we see some time pass, his wife comes and, you know, is distraught. And then we find out Jimmy runs away, and then more crime problem solving. We have the rat battle, like Jimmy comes out and kind of reveals himself, not to RoboCop yet, but like to the audience. And then this is when we need to start having Alex have like memories that, oh, like, you know, of being quote unquote killed. He starts having flashbacks of seeing Clarence's face and some of the other goons, just like we saw him have those, you know, like, you know, like he had a dream, you know, in the first movie. And so then he kind of goes out, he kind of goes rogue a little bit to go find the Junkers. And of course the monkey like doesn't want that, right? So maybe he just leaves without the monkey. At least he doesn't even take his gun or anything. He just goes rogue to go find these Junkers and like start taking them in, and sort of like one by one, he's bringing them in, arresting them. At one point during the sequence, we have to have RoboCop go to like grab one of these Junkers, and Jimmy like jumps out of a shadow with like a crowbar and like smashes RoboCop on the arm, knocks the gun or whatever he's got out of his hand. And it's like, you know, Jimmy's just going crazy on him, banging him, and he's kind of like a little teary-eyed. He's just wailing on him. The Junker is just like, I don't know what's going on. And he just gets up and runs away like, fuck this, right? And you see RoboCop turn and like he grabs the crowbar that Jimmy's got, and Jimmy's he's trying to swing it and he has to let go. He starts kicking him, it hurts his toe, and like, okay, that's not going to work. And then he starts breaking down crying, and he's like, you know, beating on with his little fist, and he's just like, you know, like, you left me, dad. And we have this little scene where we jump immediately from Jimmy ran away to Jimmy's pissed off, get the RoboCops on the scene, to immediately have him have this little moment where he kind of comes to terms with like, oh, this is my dad. And then, but he still is going to kind of like run away. Like, you know, we want to reveal this is happening. He's going to run away. And then now why RoboCop, he sort of changes his mission to like, well, now I got to find Jimmy. Like, where's Jimmy? Like, let's go find my son, which is, so he's even more rogue than he was before. And this is when, you know, the cops are going to try to bring him in. So maybe like they send the little Robo Monkey to go find him. Robo Monkey goes and finds him, plugs him in, fucking, you know, turns back on like the RoboCop chip, and he like goes back to base, you know. And this is when Lewis is like, well, what the fuck? Like, what happened? But, you know, maybe Jimmy was there and Jimmy saw that happen. Like, Jimmy was in the shadows and he saw the monkey kind of take him over. And now, even though he was mad at his dad, but he missed his dad, and now he sees his dad being taken away all over again. And now Jimmy's like, oh, fuck that.
Let's do the Emil sequence where Emil is robbing a gas station or whatever. And RoboCop, like, we're going to have the thing where he already goes rogue. He, you know, has the dream. He remembers the people that killed him. He goes out looking for him. He finds Emil like robbing this gas station, threatening this guy. And like, he goes to stop him. Like, and there, maybe it's not the whole, we killed you, man. Like, that's not what triggers the memory. Like, he grabs, you know, the Junker and he's like, you know, you are under arrest, like doing that whole thing. And have we see Jimmy watching from the shadows, just like you said. And he runs out and he hits RoboCop in the arm, and RoboCop looks at him. It's not that Jimmy stopped him. RoboCop looked at Jimmy, and then he has that memory of like, can you do that, dad, with the like TJ laser thing. And he freezes. And nice. Emil fucking takes off. Like, you know, maybe his fucking legs transform into a motorcycle and he takes off. I don't know. Because he's a Joker.
But a unicycle.
There you go. He's like Gizmo Duck, you know? But so he fucking takes off, you know, and like, you know, Jimmy's standing there like crying, staring at his dad, and RoboCop's like just frozen, like he's replaying that memory over and over and over. And then we see like, you know, maybe the fire starts because Emil had, you know, shot the gas tanks or whatever. The fire starts, Jimmy takes off running, there's the explosions, it fucks up RoboCop, and now he's like back on the mission to stop the bad guys. So we're going to do that whole thing where instead of, when he goes back to the police station, instead of him plugging in and finding all of the perps that killed him, what if he goes back and he looks up the memories of Alex, or looks up the file on Alex Murphy, finds out, yes, he's deceased, but he sees, you know, what was his wife's name? Ellen, was it?
Ellen.
Yeah. So we see, you know, like wife, Ellen, son, Jimmy, and we see the photos, and then he zooms in on Jimmy's photo, and then he plays back the memory of like, yes, the, can you do that, Dad? And plays back the memory of the kid with the crowbar at the gas station. Yes. And now he's on a fucking mission to find his kid. We do the whole sequence where he goes back home, just like they did in the movie. He's getting more and more angry because they're not there. He can't figure out what happened to him. But instead of him tracking down all the junkers, like maybe he gets one of them or something, like we could have some kind of sequence, but let's have OCP show up on the scene, like somewhere in the city, you know, show up on the scene, jump out of their truck, you know, have like a couple guys, like almost like the Johnny Law from Part 3, have them like jump out of the command OCP Jeep or whatever, and have like the little capuchin, like one of the scientists like puts it on his back, it plugs in, suddenly RoboCop snaps to, follows orders and gets in the van, but we pan out to see that Jimmy and his friends were watching from the alley. That's, I think it works. I think it actually works, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, I think it is good. And so we take RoboCop. This kind of takes the place, too, of like when – no, let me rephrase that. I think we need to have another scene like in the first movie where RoboCop goes and confronts Clarence and like takes him in and like records his – you know, it was OCP, it's Dick Jones. He records his like confession, right? And then he goes after the head of OCP. Now, we haven't really talked about like who the head of ICP is. Obviously, Dick or some version of that Dick Jones character should be here. So, you know, we can kind of do that. But yeah, like, I don't know if they're going to kind of like turn RoboCop like back into RoboCop. I like that. It's like it's a different for our movie that we don't have to copy everything from the original movie. But I'm trying to figure out now, how do we get it so that, you know, RoboCop is going to lash out again so that, you know, he kind of goes after Dick Jones? Or actually, shit, now that I'm thinking about this, it might even make more sense if they get RoboCop back, they put him back on the mission, but he like breaks his programming again. It's like the Alex personality is too strong. He's going rogue again. And so what if Dick sends Alex specifically to that like factory thing as like, it's a trick. Like he's sending them there on like some mission, but really he's just trying to isolate him so that he can have the junkers go and smash the shit out of him and like put him out of commission. Right. So we can maybe twist the story around a little bit like that, where, you know, we don't need to have that confrontation with Clarence in the middle at like the cocaine lab, because we don't want to have cocaine in our PG rated movie. You know, you know, they kind of like reprogram RoboCop back to being like a good cop. Right. And then we're going to see maybe Alex or maybe Jimmy goes and to try to talk to him again, like, you know, like, Dad, it was me, like, I'm sorry I hit you. And then your RoboCop's like, you know, hello, son, like, you know, aren't you out past curfew? Like, where are your parents? Let me call your mother, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, Dad. And then, you know, RoboCop, maybe this happens sort of like outside the police station, and the RoboCop kind of goes off, you know, it gets in the car and drives off to like, you know, somewhere there's a crime being committed. Maybe have Lewis come out and be like, hey, you look familiar, like, you know, whatever. Somehow Lewis and Jimmy are going to connect now. They're going to meet each other.
Well, hold on. Let's backtrack. So how about instead of that, like, we have the whole sequence where OCP recaptures, RoboCop. And maybe like this is where Dick Jones, like you said, like he wants to get rid of him. He's like, it's too dangerous. Like he had, and maybe because it was Clarence, that's the one that originally killed Murphy, you know, and Dick is like, okay, he's too close to me. Like, we need to take him out. Like, he keeps breaking programming. So he's going to send him in. But what if we do the whole thing where, because Jimmy and his friend saw the capuchin controlling RoboCop, you know, maybe previously in the movie, we do the thing where Lewis when RoboCop first goes rogue, Lewis goes up to him and she's like, you know, hey, do you have a name? Like the whole thing that we saw in the original movie. Mm-hmm. And he keeps walking and she goes, Murphy, it's you. And then have him kind of like stop and glitch for a moment and keep going with determination. So we have that. And maybe like Lewis is trying to figure out like what the hell happened to Murphy? Like, is it really Murphy? That whole thing. And maybe have Jimmy come to the police station to try to see his dad. And have, like, you know, the cops there, like, push him away. Like, you know, your dad's dead, kid. Sorry. You know, blah, blah. And then have Lewis confront him. And, like, what were you saying? Like, what did you see? Like, maybe he's trying to say, like, I saw them control my dad. Like, they're, you know, he's not himself. Like, that whole thing. And have the two of them talk. And he explains to Lewis that, you know, OCP or whatever. Like, I saw these guys jump out of this van. And, they, you know, they had OCP uniforms on. And they plugged that freaking robot monkey into his brain and screwed him all up. Like, he's freaking out. So Lewis starts making the connection of, wait a second. You know, like that's the control. That's the thing that's keeping him in line. We need to get rid of it. So what if Lewis sabotages the Capuchin and that lets RoboCop off the leash again?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, this is good. Yeah. I think that's much better. Yeah. Have, and even Lewis and Alexson kind of team up again. I kind of want to like have a little group, the little team, right. That's going to help RoboCop. Cause it was just him and Lewis, but now it can be like him and Lewis and Alex or Jimmy. So what if, Lewis and Jimmy kind of team up to go after RoboCop. They're going to wait for like just the right moment. And they're going to, you know, sabotage that fucking, you know, Robo Monkey, get it off of him. Alex RoboCop is going to, you know, come back to his senses and be like, oh, Jimmy, like, you know, I'm so glad you're here, blah, blah, blah. And then he's going to be like, I still need to stop, you know, the Junkers. I got to stop Clarence and stop them from doing this to anyone else ever again, you know, cause it's got to be, you know, like a superhero moment. Right. And so, yeah, forget what I said about Dixon and sending him to like the factory. It could just be that RoboCop, now that he's freed once again from the control, the Robo Monkey thing is destroyed. Now they're going to like team up and head off to that factory to go find Clarence, because he's assuming that that's where he's still hiding out. That's where they found him the first time, right? That's mm-hmm. That's where the Junkers are, in the old abandoned factories and junkyards. And so, but because Dick has that like tracking device that we see in the first movie, we can just kind of cut back to like, you know, Dick in the high res at OCP, you know, seeing, watching him go. And then he's going to like, you know, call Clarence and give him a warning. Like, you know, he's coming for you, you know, take him out of commission once and for all. And then now we're set up for the big confrontation. So it's, the roles are kind of reversed at the end, where instead of Clarence and his group showing up and then trying to find RoboCop, it's RoboCop and Lewis and Jimmy showing up trying to find Clarence and the Junkers. And I don't know necessarily that we need to walk through the whole thing, but I want to throw something in here, which is, it's from my list. It's one of the things that didn't come up, but I think it's perfect because it works anyway, which is, I was thinking like, this is one of the sillier ones where I was like, we should have RoboCop skateboard. So what I'm thinking here is that like Jimmy being like, you know, 12 year old kid. And again, it's a movie where, you know, the gang members, again, they're always like wearing the wrong like subculture clothes. Yeah, again, like the ghetto kids in the punk rock gear, like I said before, you know, wearing like neon colors and shit. So we see that Jimmy, every time we see Jimmy, he's got one of those old school like fishtail boards, like in Gleaming the Cube, you know?
Yep.
So that's just how that's how he's getting around town so fast. He's a little kid. He's a skateboarder, you know, he's getting around. And so while they're in the factory and we're having this confrontation with, you know, giant spider Clarence, there has to be a scene where, like, you know, RoboCop is like backed up against the wall and he's like, you know, he can't quite get out of the way. And then like Jimmy like slides him the skateboard. He's like, here you go, dad. And then we have RoboCop like pick it up, like, you know, smash Clarence with it, throw it down, jump on it, and then skate out of there. Like guns blazing, laser guns blazing on a skateboard.
Dude, okay, the way I'm picturing this sequence, like, first of all, back up to Dick calling Clarence. We could even have like kind of a hint thrown at the audience where he's like, you know, he's headed your way, and it's like, you know, you got the package I sent you, right? You know, something like that, and just show like a close up of Clarence's mouth like grinning, like he, you know, oh, they got some new toys, right? So yes, we have the whole thing where they show up at the steel mill, you know, and maybe like the Junkers are positioned all around, like, you know, or no, even better yet, of course they're gonna have it set up with like robotic traps and all sorts of shit. So what if they got like gun turrets or something down like the main road that leads to the factory where they're at, and like, you know, it shoots up the car and all that, and like RoboCop's telling Lewis and Jimmy, like, you know, stay behind, like, and he's trying to like make his way through, and he's getting shot, and he's shooting the cannons, and then Jimmy's like, Dad, use this, and slides up the skateboard, and we hear the like dun 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 dun, and then we see like RoboCop skating down the center road, just fucking blasting gun turrets, like,
yes,
fucking doing sweet jumps and shit.
Fuck yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh yes, this is so good. I mean,
so ridiculous. I love it.
I mean, I don't know if you have anything else, but really, I think this is it. Like, we have this big, cool, like, you know, radical, like, standoff. RoboCop, like, takes out some of, like, the Junker henchmen. We have, you know, we have him confront Clarence, who, like, unfurls his, like, giant spider legs. You know, they have a fight. Lewis gets kind of taken out, but, like, not dead. Maybe Jimmy is in danger, you know, and, like, Alex is on the ropes. Like, Clarence is about to get him in his giant, like, spider leg stabbing through his chest. Or maybe he does stab him in the chest the way that Clarence gets him, you know, in the first movie. That big spike, you're right, but then you know, if Lewis or Jimmy, one of them, you know, they're able to just reach the lever to like release the crane to drop all the shit on Clarence, and he gets smashed to pieces, and you know, and then we can kind of, you know, have our denouement with the team, you know, they get to have all their heart-to-heart talks and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. Like, we'll, you know, of course, all the villains get taken out. We could even do the toxic waste Emil scene if we want to. We could do it, you know, any which way, where maybe like the toxic waste corrodes his metal parts and he's just like a twitching pile of like goo and circuitry. You know, like we could see a skull with like an eyeball and it's like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and because it's a remake, we got to do it a little bit differently. So what if instead of toxic waste, it's what if it's like there's this big vat and it's just full of like all these old batteries. They've been there for years and it's all just like leaking, corroded, like battery acid. And one of the Junkers gets like thrown into it. Yeah, so he's just like burning and smoking like fucking Strife the Gremlin, you know?
Yeah. And like, yeah, he like stumbles out and like falls down in the road. Maybe he gets hit by one of the other Junkers. We could even do that whole sequence. But then like when we pan down, we just see like twitching. I'm picturing like the gym teacher in Class of 1999, like after he's destroyed, he's like brah, brah, yes. Brah. He's like twitching. Like I'm picturing that.
Definitely.
So we do, you know, we take out each of the Junkers, and like you said, we take out Clarence at the end with the junk pile, and you know, and I think Jimmy should throw the switch. Like maybe it's one of those things where RoboCop is pinned because he's got like the big spiked leg, like through, maybe he like pins him like through the shoulder, like ripping off one of his arms or something. Like RoboCop's really fucking damaged, and then like Lewis goes to like shoot at Clarence, but like Clarence like blocks the shot and like shoots her, and you know, Jimmy's left by himself, and like maybe he looks at Jimmy and he's like, sorry kid, you gotta say goodbye to daddy a second time, like, and he's about to kill him, and then you know Jimmy does something like, I don't know, pulls out a fucking slingshot and shoots the lever.
Yeah, exactly, that's yes for sure.
And it drops the giant scrap pile on top of Clarence. But we do need to have the ending with Dick, so maybe we do something like, you know, after they all, you know, they rescue Alex, and like, you know, Lewis is hurt, Alex is hurt, Jimmy's, you know, with it, but he's like trying to get them out of there. You know, maybe RoboCop does something like, maybe he does the USB spike and he plugs it into Clarence. And like, okay. Clarence is like twitching body and he gets all this information. He's like, we must go to OCP, or like, we must return to OCP, yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And we see like, we have the boardroom, we have, you know, Dick giving like this new presentation and blah, 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 blah. And then we have RoboCop do the exact same thing that he does in the movie, where he plugs in and he shows like Dick's involvement with Clarence and the Junkers and all the street crime and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, that's when you know, the old man is like, Dick, you're fired, like that whole thing. And RoboCop, maybe he doesn't even kill him. Maybe he like shoots him with like some kind of stun gun, and we see Dick kind of drop and start twitching, and then like Lewis and some of the other Detroit police officers come in and cuff him and drag him off, you know, like, you know, oh, Dick got fucking killed or fired, you know, he lost his job. that whole thing. And we can even end it with, you know, like, what's your name, son? And he's like, Murphy. You know, we could still do the ending how it is, but, you know, take out all the bad guys. I think it works. I think it definitely works.
I think so too. And I want to add one tiny detail to that very end. I think that's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. We shouldn't kill Dick again. It should be less violent just to get him arrested. I love the stun gun idea. And so, yeah, when the old man turns to look at Murphy, he says, you know, nice, you know, like, nice going, son, like, what's your name? Instead of it just being RoboCop, you see Lewis walk up and, like, she puts her arm around him, and then, you know, Jimmy walks up and Alex puts his arm around him, and it's like their little family's back together, and he looks at the old man, and he's like, Murphy, but he means, like, all of them, you know what I mean? It's like, what's your name, son? Murphy. And it's like, now you see, like, the family is kind of back together a little bit, and then, you know, boom, we smash cut to the logo and the theme song, and we're out of there, man.
Oh my god. So because we didn't use everything, I want to comment on my other notes. So it's kind of funny because we did in a roundabout way use one of the things I had, which is RoboCop isn't allowed to use lethal force because we don't want kids emulating violence. So instead he has Inspector Gadget style attachments and uses rubber bullets and stun guns.
I mean, we can kind of do that anyway.
I mean, we kind of did. Like, you know, the only thing is, like, I pictured, like, when I was talking about the Inspector Gadget thing, in my head, I had a scene where, like, RoboCop had, like, a weird little helicopter that came out of his back, and he was, like, just flying along.
That'd be ridiculous.
And then my other ones I have, and this one we also kind of did in a roundabout way, that he befriends a lovable pack of street urchins who help RoboCop in the third act.
exactly. Well, we could even do that. We could have it be like when they're in the factory taking down junkers, that like in one of the scenes with one of the junkers, like they just suddenly, you just hear all the screaming, ah, and they just get swarmed with, like, you know, like Little G and his gang come out to, like, you know, help RoboCop. And of course, Little G has to, like, look at RoboCop. He looks back and he gives him a big thumbs up, you know?
Of course. But, oh my god, like, that's so fucking perfect. Like, of course they would help out. Like, okay, yeah, so the street urchins are there. That's fucking funny. And then the last one I had I'm so glad we didn't get, but I just have ninjas. Kids love ninjas.
Yeah, and I think that could have been good, but, like, they had that ninja in the third one, too. But, well, and I had mentioned, too, that, like, you know, like, Lewis, like, she takes out that suspect at the beginning with, like, a little, like, you know, karate kick, whatever. So we can maybe have it that, you know, Lewis doesn't use guns either because it's nonviolence. Maybe Lewis, you know, is just like a, you know, she just uses, like, karate moves the whole time, you know?
Friend of the martial arts specialist, hand-to-hand combat.
Exactly, yeah. Be perfect.
Oh, so, my God.
Oh, God. My last one, and I'm glad we didn't get it, was whipped cream pie fight.
See, but you know, the funny thing with that is that could have totally worked in that montage sequence where we could see something like a riot break out in, like, a diner or something, and, like, people are throwing food around, and we could have it very much like Dawn of the Dead. Like, RoboCop would walk in and then have, like, one of, like, the people that are robbing the place just smash him in the face with, like, a cream pie and have him look over, like, wipe the shit from his face and be like, you are under arrest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, have him walk into the diner and be like, you are all causing a public disturbance, and then splat.
I mean, really, that could have worked. So
okay, it's in there. It's in there. We put them all in there.
Holy crap. I know we got to wrap things up because we're limited on time, but I have to say, like, I really hope listeners, I hope you guys enjoy this, and please let us know, because I had a ton of fun. I had more fun with this than I expected us to. And I feel like if listeners dig this, this is something we could put in the regular rotation of pick a, you know, a movie that we love, and then write the shitty, weird ass producer notes and try to work within those confines. Because as you know, you had mentioned that I had said this on one of our rants, but I still believe it, that when you put some kind of confines on creativity, like when you put limitations, it makes people be more creative because you have to work within those boundaries. When you just have carte blanche, you know, you can do whatever the fuck you want, and it gets boring real quick, because that's when you get stuff like, you know, the what's the term for, like, the unstoppable hero that has all the powers,
the Mary Sue or whatever.
Thank you.
Like,
yes,
they can do anything. Like,
yeah,
they're just good at everything for no reason.
And that's the thing. Like, you can easily fall into that trap when you don't have limitations. So I love this framing device of, like, just shitty ass producers, like, forcing writers to, like, try to work within their ideas.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of fun. This is great.
Yeah, me too. I agree completely. It worked out great because we had these limitations. And so the story ended up being more interesting than if someone had just said, like, come up with a remake for RoboCop and you could do what you want. I mean, I would have just been like, I don't know, the first one's good. Like, I would have been stuck. Like, how do I change it? Or right. If given carte blanche to literally do anything, you start to go into territories where, oh, I can do this and I can do this and I can do this. And then it just becomes too much. And I think when people have that sort of freedom, you know, they really just get overindulgent. And then there's just too much shit in the movie, you know, and so this is good because we were able, you know, to force it to go in a certain direction. But like, how many times were we just like, oh my God, like that totally works. And like, that fits with this and that fits with this. And it was like, there would have been no story if we had just started this show with, let's just retell RoboCop as a PG comedy. Like, we could have, but it wouldn't have been as fun as what we came up with because we had the limitations. So yeah, I think this was sort of a rough beginning. We had a rough beginning to the episode, and it's a rough beginning to, like, this new topic because we weren't really sure how to handle it, and I think we were both a little bit nervous to kind of
absolutely
get into the beat of it. But now that we've done it and we've proven that it totally works and it's fun, like, hell yeah, next time we're going to jump right into it. We're going to have a lot of fun. Fuck, we'll probably even have more notes and just, you know, really go nuts.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm already trying to figure out, like, what movies we could do. But yeah, like I said, I mean, I really hope listeners dig it. And I want to get some feedback and hear what people think. So if you guys like it and you want more like this, please let us know.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely do that. And while you're letting us know, you can also visit us on the socials at RaisedByRentals.com and at RaisedByRentals on, you know, Instagram and Facebook and all the ones that matter. We don't care about X. And of course, you can leave us a podcast rating, leave a comment, all those sorts of things. What about you, Mike? What do you got going on?
Right now, I'm not doing a ton in the realm of podcasting. Still doing Count Creepyhead Saturday Morning Monster Mash, where three grown man children talk about toys and bitch about pop culture. The Boogeyman's Closet is still on hiatus. We do have some specials that will hopefully be coming in the next few weeks. I currently have a bunch of art things going on that I will be posting more about online as I can. We have the Nickel City Comic Con coming up in June, so I'll be putting a lot of new art up on both Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. If you're not following me, it's Zarakis on Instagram and Mike Alvarez Art on both Facebook and TikTok, where I post a lot of, like, drawing videos and, like, little practice sketches and stuff. But yeah, so the Boogeyman's Closet will be returning hopefully in July, in full swing. And until then, I'll just be focusing mostly on art, Raised by Rentals, and Count Creepyhead.
Yeah, and you have a new podcast out too, don't you?
Yes, that is on its way. We've recorded 4 episodes. It's Member Berries and Munchies. I still need to get that all set up. Like, I put the preview episode on our Boogeyman's Closet Patreon, which actually, I believe I put it up for everybody. So even if you're not a patron, you could check it out on Boogeyman's Closet Patreon. But yeah, that will hopefully be getting an official posting in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, so that's coming very soon.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Can't wait for the official release of Member Berries and Munchies. Or is it Munchies and Member Berries?
Member Berries and Munchies, and we will be releasing 2 episodes right off the bat. So, because I did release that preview episode, we have the second one already in the can. So, like, week 1, episodes 1 and 2 will both drop.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely looking forward to that. And you can check out more podcasts, more artists, musicians, and other rad people doing rad stuff at radpantheon.com and at radpantheon on all the socials. Once again, I will say thanks to everyone for tuning in to the Raisable Rentals program. If you had fun with us, don't forget, visit us on the socials, leave us those comments, tell us what we should improv ruin next time. And with that, I'm Josh.
I'm Mike.
We have to return some videotapes.
Buy that for $1.
He is a robot. He is a cop. He is a robot cop.